Welcome everybody to the meditation class again. Some of you must be quite tired, very busy this morning. I appreciate your energy, willingness to work hard. So today I'll begin talking about the fourth insight. During the third insight in the meditation, you see all the three characteristics of natural phenomena: anicca, impermanence, dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, anatta, not being in control, arising because there's another cause to arise, and passing away because it is just natural to pass away. We can't wish that something should not arise or should not pass away. And no permanent entity, no hard, lasting core, no soul, no atta. So this is the unique aspect of the Buddha Dharma, the teaching of the Buddha. Nothing has permanent, lasting, hard core, no entity. Everything is a process. So, you know, in some ways, people want to believe that there must be something lasting, something that doesn't change, something that exists forever. And in the teaching of the Buddha, there is no such thing as a thing. There's nothing actually, only process. When we talk about a thing, try to understand, what do you mean by a thing? The word thing has many meanings. It can mean almost anything, actually. It's an idea. There is no thing. There is only process. So this is very deep, very important. This is where the Buddha Dharma becomes very different from other spiritual ideas, teachings. In some other teachings, you hear about impermanence in some ways. And also, in some ways, unsatisfactoriness also, you hear about that dukkha. But when in other ideas, when they talk about impermanence, they talk about impermanence of shape and form. Well, let's say, for example, you drop a glass and it breaks into pieces. And people say, oh, it's impermanent. But was the glass permanent before it broke? No. Even before it broke, still it's impermanent. Impermanence is happening, imperceptible. So when we think of the shape, then we think that as long as the shape stays the same, it is permanent. But in the teaching of the Buddha, impermanence is not impermanence of the shape, it's impermanence of the quality. Heat and cold, hardness, softness, cohesion, pressure, weight, heaviness, these are always changing. So, until this third insight, we see very, in a general way, all three characteristics. And the same anicca, dukkha, anatta will become deeper and deeper as we develop higher insights. So the fourth insight, which is in Pali called Udayabhaya Jnana, it's actually Udaya and Vaya. And this Va becomes double Ba. So it becomes Udayabhaya. Udaya means to arise. Vaya means to pass away, to disappear. And another way of defining nature is Hutva abhavato anicca. Hutva means having come into being. That means happening, arising. And abhavato means not existing anymore. So in this meaning, in this deep insight, impermanence doesn't mean existing in a different form. Impermanence means totally disappearing. This is where people get very confused. they misunderstand that. So changing is one aspect of impermanence in a general way, but real impermanence means it does not exist anymore. That is real impermanence. So as long as we have any idea of something changing but still existing in some form, we are still clinging to the idea of lasting, something lasting. Although it is a little bit different from what it has been before, we still feel like it is the same, generally the same. So anicca really means not existing anymore. So in this insight, the person has developed very strong concentration, very strong mindfulness, very little thinking happening, very little, which means once in a while we think of the phenomenon, not about anything else. When the person comes to this stage, this person has almost stopped thinking about other things, but still think about the meditation practice and the experience. Once in a while, not very much. And before coming to this stage, the meditator has a lot of concern or thinking about whether he's doing right or not. What is this? Is this nama? Or is this rupa? Or is this a nature? Or is this just dukkha, unsatisfactoriness? Is this feel satisfactory or not? There's this kind of a wavering still going on. But when the person comes to this stage, all that is gone. Meditation becomes very natural and it goes on without much effort. So that's why the mind has become so balanced that it is called, it has this upekkha, equanimity. Very strong equanimity develops. And this equanimity has many characteristics, many aspects. One is no terror, no delight, which means delight is a kind of lobha, liking. No liking, no not liking. Both overcome both of these things, these feelings. Neither happy nor unhappy. No excitement anymore. The mind becomes very calm, balanced. And meditation becomes automatic. Very good. At this stage, not much effort necessary. The mind stays there most of the time. Once in a while it wanders. And when the person notices that the mind is wandering, that's enough. And it's back in the meditation again. No need to struggle. Before that, the mind just wants to go away. Think about something else. Bring it back again. In a few seconds, it's gone again. So it's like a struggle. We are fighting with our own mind. But after a while, the mind settles there, stays there. So we are not fighting with our thoughts anymore. So meditation automatic, and energy also balanced. Before this stage, sometimes we have little energy, not much interest. And at this stage, we have enough energy, balance. Before that, sometimes we try too hard. We put too much effort, the mind becomes agitated again. So too much effort, energy, causes agitation. Too little energy and too little effort, effort causes sluggishness, laziness. So at this stage, there's balance. Just maintain that there's enough awareness to keep the meditation going. And long sitting, no difficulty. The person can sit for a long time without difficulty because there's no restlessness in our mind anymore at this stage. So in most cases, when a person cannot still sit still, that shows that the mind is restless. Not just pain in the body. Pain in the body comes and goes. Even at this stage, sometimes there's pain, dullness, ache. But when the mind becomes really settled with no restlessness anymore, there's no desire do anything else. So the mind just stays with meditation, just watch everything rising, passing away, right on the spot, on the moment. And the object of meditation also becomes more and more refined, very fine, very subtle. Before that very gross sensation, very gross thoughts appears, but now the sensations also become very fine. The thoughts also become very slow, very fine. Fine, subtle, and another is the mind does not wander. So I mentioned that before. So there are six qualities of the mind. No terror, no delight, no liking, no disliking, neither happy nor unhappy, which means not excited about anything. The meditation becomes automatic, energy balance, sitting for a long time without difficulty. The object of meditation becomes very refined, very fine and subtle, and no distraction. And there are many different kinds of upekkha. So this is called the upekkha with six qualities. Sa inga upekkha. Sa inga upekkha. Pichupananam dhammanam vipri nama nupasani panya udhyabhya nupasani jnanam. This is the definition of this insight. So this word is very important. Pichupananam. Pichupana means pachupana, present, at present. So to see mental process and physical process right now, not thinking about what happened before. So some people think that if you think about the past and see that all those things happened in the past are gone, and they feel that they understand the nature. But that is not real nature wisdom, not real insight into impermanence. Real impermanence, the insight into the nature of impermanence, happens in the present. So pichupananam, happening now. Dhammanam, this dhamma, also the word has many meanings. Here it means mental and physical process. And of those happening right now, of those dhammana, dhamma, vipritnama nupasani. Vipritnama means disappearing. And in that disappearing, panya, understanding truly, is called udhyabhya nupasani jnanam. Udhyabhya jnanam. Insight of impermanence. So at this stage, whenever the person pays attention or notice something arising, the arising becomes very clear and it disappears immediately. So noticing is very, very sharp and clear, arising very clear and passing away very clear. So immediately arising and immediately passing away. So the person can see that it arises here and it passes away here, without becoming otherwise. Jatam rupam pichupanam. Rupa, happening now. Tasa nivatti lakshanam. Of that rupa, the characteristic of arising is called udayo. Vipri nama lakshanam, disappearing, its characteristic of disappearing is called vayo. And the two together makes the word udhyabhya. So there are many different kinds of pichupana actually we talk about. And one is called sankati pichupana. Taking things as a group. For example, if we listen to this sound, it takes a few seconds to disappear. The first sound we hear, tong, and then slowly disappears. If we take it as a whole, it takes a few seconds. This is called santati. Santati means a series. taking the whole series as one. So this is a very gross understanding of Anisha. But if you pay more attention to the sound, you hear the ringing, many small ringing, one after another rising, but each one is weaker and weaker. So new sounds are rising each moment. Every second, many, many sounds arises, many, many sounds passes away. And if you can think theoretically, you can see that the vibration happens about 1,000 times a second. Very sharp, very quick. And kana pichupana is very short. But the matter, material and physical, mental phenomenon, the horizon passes away so fast that we cannot really experience or see that quickly. Because Buddha said that the physical phenomenon arises and passes away. Let me see. I should write down that. 1,000 billion. In a second. 1,000 billion arising and passing away in a second. How can we experience that much? That is impossible for an ordinary person. And for mental process, it is about twice faster. About twice faster. Mental process arises and passes away even much faster. But if we can experience in 1 second about 10 anicca, then we can be satisfied that we have understood anicca. Not exactly. So you might think that 1 second is very short, and how can I see 10 things or phenomena arising and passing away in that short time? Normally we cannot see that. Normally about 2 in a second. But when you become very concentrated and calm, for you, time stretch out. 1 second can become a long time. So this is something very interesting. Many meditators experience that. They'll be sitting and meditating, and sometimes they think that they've been doing that for a long time, and then when they watch the clock, it's just about 5 minutes. They think it's an hour. And sometimes, in another state of meditation, you'll be sitting and meditating for 3-4 hours, and you don't know that. And you think that you've been sitting for just about an hour. So time becomes very unreal. So time can stretch out as your mindfulness becomes very quick, sharp. And sometimes when you get into deep samadhi, time disappears. So distortion of time happens, beginning in this stage. For you, time becomes very distorted. Sometimes it feels like a long time, sometimes it feels like just a few minutes. At this stage, when you experience something, and because you have the habit of sometimes thinking and noting using the names, you try to name it, but the moment you try to name it, it's not there anymore. So you feel that I cannot say anything about it anymore. You can just see it, just watch it without thinking, without doing anything about it. So for a beginner, so the teachers teach to note everything. So when you hear something, you note hearing, hearing, hearing. When you think something, some thoughts, and the teacher teach you, when you think, note, thinking, thinking. When you feel pain, note, pain, pain, or vibration, movement. But when you come to this stage, the moment you try to note it, it is not there anymore. So you can't do nothing anymore. You just give up and just stay where, just looking at it. So at this stage, you are just looking, seeing, not doing anything, not noting anything anymore. You cannot do that anymore. Because noting is very slow and seeing is very fast. A lot of discussions here, given from many, many different texts. And at this stage, sometimes meditators experience light. In the eyes, the person can see very bright light. Actually, it's a sign of a very concentrated mind. And this bright light could have different shape and different colors also. Sometimes it feels like a very bright star appearing very quickly and passing away, disappears. Sometimes it appears from one side, moves across. So the meditator sometimes gets very interested. It's moving, moving, moving. So you notice that bright light moving. Sometimes it's bigger. It could be like a moon, round moon, very bright. Sometimes like a rain. Even in summertime meditation, a meditator experiences a sort of light. Some people make fun of it also. You meditate and you see light. So it's not fun actually, it's not funny. It's a sign that your mind is becoming more and more concentrated. More energy in your mind. It's not better or worse. So when the time goes very fast, that means that your mind is working very fast. In between the mental thought process, always after a process, there's a gap. And this gap is called, in Pali language, bhavanga. When a person has too many bhavanga consciousness, bhavanga mental states arising, this is like a big gap. So in 1 second, for example, if the person has many gaps in between, then for that person, in 1 second he can experience only a few things. If there are fewer gaps, then you experience more. So when you experience more, it feels like the time becomes slow. So if you have studied quantum and relativity, you'll understand it much more easily. So when the mind works faster, you feel like the time becomes slowed down. This is very real. So in some cases, this is the real experience. But in another meditative state, when the mind goes beyond time, beyond phenomena, you don't see arising and passing away anymore at that moment. For you, time doesn't exist. Timeless. So there's a kind of state where time becomes non-existent. For you, time does not exist. And Obhasa, and then Jnana, another characteristic is, the wisdom becomes very clear. Seeing mental process as just pure mental process, not a being, very clear. You don't think about it, but you really see it. This is something happening. This is not a being, not a thing, not I. And whenever you observe any physical process, the same thing you see, very clearly, without any doubt, without thinking, that this is just a natural process, and you see arising and passing away very clearly. No effort even. It's so simple and natural. So this is called jnana. So light, clear insight knowledge. Very clear insight, very clear knowledge, very sharp wisdom even. It's amazing. You become very surprised that the mind can see so clearly. Mostly we are very dull and cloudy, very confused. We don't really see anything clearly. But at this stage of meditation, without thinking anything, whenever we pay notice to something, we see exactly the way it is. Very sharp, very clear. And we feel very satisfied about it too. Very happy, very satisfied sometimes. And piti, a lot of joy and interest. Sometimes raptures going over the body. The mind becomes so still that thinking stops, observing becomes very clear, and knowledge inside becomes very sharp and clear. So there's a kind of joy arising in that moment. But too much joy makes the mind become agitated again. So that's why these are called vipattanu pakkhitesa, the impurities of meditation. In itself, they are not impurities. If we pay attention to that, if we are aware of that, and if we don't become attached to that, or become proud of it, or if we don't have any wrong understanding about these experiences, then we just arise and pass away. We are just another phenomenon. But if we become attached to those states, and if we become proud of it also sometimes we misinterpret that. People think that, oh, this is nirvana, I'm experiencing nirvana. Then this becomes an impurity. Wrong understanding. So, obhasa, light, jnana, clear inside knowledge, piti, joy, pleasurable interest, and pasadi, tranquility. The body and mind becomes very cool. Really, it feels very cool. Even in your body, you feel like you're sitting in a very cool air-conditioned room. To use this modern thing. But sometimes, those who are not familiar with this air conditioner, they feel like they are sitting in a very cool mist around, very cool. And you can feel sometimes in your body small drops of water, very cold water, hitting your body. Feel very cool. Even the body temperature can go down. And I get interested in these things. So in my monastery, I have thermometer and blood pressure and blood pulse counter, a small machine. So sometimes I just strap myself with these things and try to measure the pressure, the blood and pulse and temperature. And really the temperature, pulse and pressure goes down, which shows that the body metabolism is slowing down. Only the mind is very active, but not thinking. So that shows that thinking uses more energy. Worry uses a lot of energy. If you don't think and worry, the mind becomes very sharp, but it uses a minimum amount of energy only. So tranquility and sukha, happiness, bliss also. Because the mind is not attached to anything at that moment, not thinking about anything, feels very free, very happy too. So this is like a paradox. How can a person be so happy seeing that everything is arising and passing away immediately? Right now arising and right now passing away. Why? So some people ask me the same question many times. Many people ask me, you feel happy because you are totally detached. So detachment brings you happiness, real happiness. Attachment is a burden. So most people, mostly, feel that when they get what they want, then they be happy. But real happiness is not wanting anything. Very hard to understand. Those who don't practice meditation and just think about it, couldn't believe it. So at this stage of meditation, you don't want anything at all. Enough food to eat, you're satisfied. A very small place, warm enough or cool enough, you're satisfied. Just enough clothes, just to keep you warm, you're satisfied. No desire for anything more than bare necessity. Adimokkha means resolution, confidence. At this stage, the person really has deep confidence in Dharma. This is really true. This practice is real practice. It really leads to deep understanding and freedom. You have no doubt about it anymore. Total overcoming of doubt. And Padraha in Pali means a lot of energy. You don't feel lazy anymore. The body doesn't feel heavy anymore. You have so much energy that you keep on meditating. You want to meditate. Padraha, energy, exertion, no fatigue, no sleepiness, and some people don't sleep at all. They can meditate the whole day, the whole night. Sometimes they lie down and they let themselves to sleep. They don't try to sleep, but they tell themselves, if I go to sleep, that's okay. But I'll stay mindful as much as possible. So at this stage, what my teacher also told me, don't think of going to sleep or don't plan to sleep. Just try to be mindful as much as possible, and when you fall asleep, it's okay, your body needs to sleep. And you wake up again a few hours later, sometimes just about an hour or two, you wake up again. And you're ready to meditate, you don't feel sleepy anymore. So, sleeplessness, and this is not insomnia. Yes, 5 minutes of meditation means you are not thinking about anything anymore. You feel so refreshed, you have so much energy. So sleeplessness, no sleepiness anymore, no fatigue. Upatthana, awareness, mindfulness, very sharp, very strong. So this mindfulness and concentration, the two are very similar but different. When you are concentrated, your mind stays on one thing, but you don't really see sharply arising and passing away. But when you are very mindful, you see arising and passing away very sharply. Your mind stays on the process, and you see arising and passing away. So, samatha meditation gives you very deep concentration, but doesn't give you clear knowledge, clear insight. But when the mind becomes very, very mindful, concentration also becomes very strong too. Sometimes more concentrated, sometimes more mindful. So when the mind becomes more and more concentrated, your mind stays on one object only. For a long time, one object. And if it becomes more concentrated, it becomes only barely aware of the object and stays there. Sometimes you lose awareness, but the mind doesn't become distracted. The mind is very calm and still, barely aware of the object. So in this case, if you know that this is happening, try to develop more awareness by noticing another phenomenon too. So if you see two phenomena, then you can keep alert, become more mindful. When mindfulness becomes very strong, you can be aware of a lot of things happening at the same time. You are not trying to notice one object or two objects anymore. You are not trying to notice anything. You are not selecting any object. You are just over there and there. And everything coming and hitting the awareness. It feels like objects are coming and hitting the awareness. Many objects coming. Seeing, hearing, sensations in the body. But when too many objects coming, and when the awareness cannot handle those things very well, then the mind becomes agitated. So when you experience that the mind is losing clearness, then try to limit the object. Calm down, pay more attention to one or two. So you need to adjust a little bit. And upekkha, I've talked about it just now, equanimity and automatic awareness, ready awareness. So in the beginning, we try to pay attention to one object and the mind wanders away. We notice that wandering mind, thinking mind, and bringing back and put it on another object, on the object again. We have to work very hard. At this stage, the mind stays there. It is always ready, it is always present. Sometimes we feel like awareness is like a mirror. It's there, and everything that passes in front of the mirror reflects it in the mirror. So automatically aware of that. You have no worry to be mindful. Sati and Sampajana both are very strong at that moment, even before that also. Here it means mindfulness is present and ready all the time. It is there. You are not selecting any object anymore. Mindfulness is there, and it is automatically aware of whatever is arising and passing away. So very easy. Meditation becomes very, very easy. And another thing is the most important thing, nikanti. Nikanti means attachment. So all the above nine experiences happens more or less to every meditator. This is the sign that the mind is becoming more and more concentrated, more and more aware, That's why you experience life sometimes very sharp insight, sometimes a lot of joy, tranquility, happiness, bliss, a lot of confidence, energy, all those things. These are all very good, very good. There's nothing wrong about that. But if you get attached to any one of these, then that becomes impurity. So it means life itself is not impurity. Clear insight is not impurity. It is just pure, very good. Only we get attached to that. So sometimes when we get very attached to this clear, sharp seeing, we become proud of it also. Oh, I can see it so clearly. And another time we said, we want that again. And that one thing is nikandhi. And that becomes impurity. So any of these experiences in course, tanha, mana, and ditti. Tanha means attachment, mana means pride, ditti means misinterpretation, wrong understanding. When we see bright light, clear light, sometimes it's a diffuse light. Not any shape, no shape. Not like a star, not like a moon, not like a rain. But just diffuse light feels very bright in the mind. Because the mind becomes so alert that we experience brightness in the mind. And some people misinterpret that as enlightenment. Oh, now I'm enlightened. My mind is so bright and so clear and so peaceful, so calm and free. And the insight is so sharp and cannot be better. Nobody can do any better. So if we interpret it that way, that is wrong understanding. So tanha arising or mana arising or ditti arising. That is impurity. So there are 10 upasanupakirisa, 10 impurities of vipassana. The first 9 are in themselves not impurities. Only the 10th one. So please understand that. Because even in upekha, we become so balanced that we don't need to meditate. I mean, we don't have to try to meditate. Meditation is just happening. Sometimes we think that I don't need to do anything, just relax. If you do that in the beginning, it feels very good. You don't have to try. So relaxed and so peaceful and calm, so free. But after a while, the mind loses energy. It becomes dull and sleepy. And when it becomes dull and sleepy, it loses sharpness, awareness. And after a while, you lose even concentration. So whenever you experience these things, it is very important to remind yourself that in itself they are not impurities, only attachment or pride or wrong understanding is impurity. So this obhasa, bright light, can happen by just samatha meditation also, just pure concentration. And it can happen because of vipassana insight also. The understanding becomes so clear and sharp that we feel very bright inside. So these things we experience as, in fact, from the very beginning of the vipassana. Even the first insight, the mind becomes quite clear, mindfulness becomes quite strong, and some samadhi also quite strong. We begin to experience sometimes light, sometimes pity, a lot of joy, zest, a lot of interest also, sometimes. But at this stage, it becomes very, very strong. Some people, depending on their personality, see many different images also. Some people see Buddha images. Some people see very peaceful scenery. And because I like scenery, beautiful scenery and nature, I love nature, I see most of those things. Rocky mountains and snow-capped mountains and frozen lakes, sometimes very clear lake. The surface of the lake is like a big mirror reflecting all the mountains and trees. So depending on the person's personality, images like that appears in the mind, very sharp, very vivid, as if you are there looking at it. It's not vague. It's like you are there. So in some cases, you can interpret that also, but interpretation is not important here. You can interpret your personality also, what kind of person you are. Because a person whose basic nature is aversion, this person will see terrible images like dead bodies, ugly faces. A person who has a lot of confidence, sadha, the person may see beautiful Buddha image, sometimes live Buddha. You're not really seeing the real Buddha, but your mind creates a Buddha. Real, moving, walking about, doing things. You can even experience that. Yeah, the explanation's not very important actually, because sometimes the circle of light seems like rotating. Sometimes it arises from the bottom and goes up. Sometimes from the side, going to another side. So no matter what happens, just take notice, don't get distracted. Just notice seeing light, that's all. Don't interpret anything. Because when you interpret, then you think. When you think, you lose awareness. Your concentration and mindfulness will go down. And here in Burmese, this Seattle said, when the people experience this light, you don't only see light, you feel very light too. You feel it. So, met po ne bandhya tu wo ya do jang liyong phi po di, we le phi ma ta yi. You think that because I'm experiencing enlightenment, this light is appearing. This is the sign of enlightenment. So misunderstanding. And because of that also the person feel very happy and delighted. A kind of greed arises too. Sometimes thoughts arise also. We see phenomena the way they are, arising and passing away, then we begin to think, this is really impermanent. Things arises and passes away. And even though we start thinking, still the awareness is very sharp. So we think that my understanding is very sharp. So you attach to identify with understanding, it becomes my understanding. You feel that this is my understanding, my wisdom, my insight. And this my is impurity. The inside is not impurity, but my becomes impurity. Rapture, very strong rapture arising, it can go through the whole body like waves. Sometimes it can happen to only part of the body. Sometimes you feel that your body is floating. Looking up, you feel like there's no weight in your body anymore. Sometimes you feel like the whole body disappears sometimes. Only the mind is there, awareness is there, the whole body disappears.
The person becomes unconscious. Doesn't know anything anymore. It's not aware of anything anymore.
This also, in some cases, people feel that because
all the mental and all physical phenomena stop and disappear, and that this is enlightenment. Because one aspect of enlightenment
is cessation of mental and physical phenomena.
But in this case, it is not real enlightenment.
For a brief moment, the mind just stops. So there's a kind of blank. But immediately you become aware of it again and see that there was a blank. The difference is that when you see this gap, when this gap happens, after the gap, your sharpness, clarity stays the same. You see the same phenomenon in the same way again. The real enlightenment, when it happens, after that, the mind slows down a little bit. It's not as sharp as it was. Although mindfulness is there, concentration is also there, The mind is not so sharp, so fast anymore. So this black becoming something like unconscious is not real matter. Sometimes the tranquility also becomes very, very strong. The mind and body becomes very, very tranquil, and then it becomes unconscious. Very brief moment only, the person becomes unconscious. Sometimes because of samadhi also, the mind becomes very, very concentrated, and the object of meditation becomes very dim and disappears. And the mind becomes blank, unaware. But the body stays the same, very calm, not moving, not falling down. So when you become sleepy, your body falls down. But with this kind of samadhi, the body doesn't fall down, doesn't move. It just stays there, very calm. Even though for a few moments you fall asleep. And sometimes because of upekkha also, upekkha, equanimity, I can't find a suitable English word for it. You don't worry about meditation anymore. If in the beginning you worry a lot, am I being mindful? Is my mind here? Is my mind wandering? What shall I do now? So a lot of thoughts and worry about meditation happens. But at this stage, no thought, no worry about meditation. The mind becomes very tranquil and relaxed and relaxed and relaxed. After a while it becomes unconscious. So when you become too relaxed, you become unconscious. Sometimes it's really going to sleep also. Fall asleep, real sleep. But this sleep is very different from normal sleep. Normally when you sleep, your body becomes very cannot maintain the posture when you sleep normally. Limp, yes, limp is the right word. The body becomes very limp. But when you meditate and the mind becomes very calm and peaceful, concentration becomes very strong, you sit and then fall asleep, but your body doesn't become limp. It maintains the posture. When you wake up again, the mind is still very clear. You don't have any drowsiness. So you are ready to meditate again. A lot of people I know, sometimes I experience that too. Meditating, sitting, sitting. Because doing that for many hours a day, sometimes I just fall asleep. Long time sometimes, and then wake up again. Refreshed. Enough sleep. The mind is alert and clear. Energetic also. And then automatically begins to meditate. The moment you wake up, you meditate. So normally when people wake up, they don't really know that they are awake. And vague thoughts like dream and thought mix happens for a long time, and then slowly they wake up. But for a meditator, it's very different. You meditate and you fall asleep. The moment you wake up, with the first consciousness, meditation is together. So you're ready to meditate. It's a very good thing. And surprisingly, at this stage, some people meditate in their dream. Have you heard of it? Can you meditate in a dream? So one of the tests also, my teacher also, many times before he asked me, do you meditate in your dream? I said, not yet. He said, okay, try to be more mindful, more mindful. Meditate more. So I tried to meditate, meditate. And once I meditated in my dream. And I was so happy because I had something to tell my teacher. Because we want to please our teacher, and we also want our teacher to think very well of us. So I went to tell my teacher. I just went to his place and waited for a while until he came out. And I said, I have something to tell you. I was very young, very childish too in some ways, very immature. But I was very happy. So I went and tell my teacher, he just said, he has a very pleased smile, said, very good, very good. Your mindfulness is becoming strong. So we can meditate unconsciously even. It becomes a habit. So
We meditate about what we do during the day, what we used to do during the day. For example, a doctor will meditate in the dream. I mean, a doctor might dream of operating or giving a treatment, giving injections or giving advice. And people who are working in the department stores or things like that, in their dream, they will be selling things, buying and selling things. It's quite natural. So for a student, maybe in a dream, the student studying and sitting for exam, many times I dream of examination. Terrible. Something is missing. I can't answer my exam, my questions. Like a nightmare. So it is quite natural that we dream about the things that we are used to dream. So when we become very a good meditator, when meditation becomes your habit and nature, you dream about it. So that is only a sign that meditation has become your habit. Very good. And the moment you wake up, you're ready to meditate. But after a while, you don't dream much anymore. Very rarely you dream. You fall asleep and it's complete sleep. You wake up, ready to meditate. In between, no dream. And arahant doesn't dream anymore. So dream is a sign that there's some sort of moha. Moha. Many meanings to moha. Something unconscious happening. So for an arahant, there's nothing unconscious anymore. Conscious and unconscious become one. For most people, more unconscious than conscious. Things happening, even when we are awake now, for most people, a lot of unconscious thoughts going on. But for a meditator, those thoughts become conscious. So in that way, a meditator can change the unconscious mind even, which is a very strange idea for most psychologists. So that's how this meditation influences people's personality. It can change people's personality. There's no other way so effective to do this. Meditation can change a person's personality. Mental sickness, a lot of mental sickness, neurosis, disappears. Just disappears. You don't have to do anything about it. So this is a good way to really develop qualities, good qualities, overcome bad habits also. And a lot of people at this stage, even they quit smoking. Smoking is not actually breaking any precepts, but a lot of people give up smoking. Give up even drinking coffee or tea even too much. If you need, you drink a little bit. If you don't need, you don't do anything anymore. You don't drink it anymore. So any kind of attachment or addiction, even addicted to cigarettes, smoking, addiction to coffee, even, you can give up very easily. You don't even try to give up. You don't feel like doing it anymore. So I know a lot of people, my friends, who were alcoholics before, who smoke cigarettes a lot, they quit smoking. And at this stage also, many kind of bodily sickness also disappears. Very strange. Not only mental. Real bodily sickness symptoms disappear. And this pasadi, tranquility, and piti also, they are very similar, very close. Piti and pasadi. Joy, rapture, tranquility has tremendous therapeutic power. So that's why you hear people overcome sickness, diseases after they meditate. Mental sickness, bodily sickness. A lot of phobia, insomnia also. And when there's a lot of pasadi, tranquility, because of that, people don't want to go to any places where there's too noisy and too many people. They try to avoid unnecessary activities, disturbances. They want to go away and live in a very quiet and peaceful place and just meditate. And at this stage,
Even when you walk, you feel like your body has no weight. You just think of taking a step and the leg is already moving there. You are aware of it, but you don't feel the weight. When you take one step after another, you feel like you're walking in the air. Your feet just barely touching. You feel the touching sensation with your feet in the ground, on your sole. You feel the sensation, but you don't feel the weight. That is thing. You can walk very fast. You feel like running. And no ache, pain, no feeling hot. The mind not distracted. Very wonderful experience. So here in Burmese, I want to say, Pujam Atavatana Yoga Amyadi Thu Kana Kya Kheni Yashita. Some diseases disappears. And here's one Pali Gata from Dhammapada, very good. Sunya Dharam Pave Chatsa Santa Chittasa Bhikkhuna. A person meditating in a very quiet place. Atmanu Si Rati Hoti. He experiences beyond human happiness, joy. Sama Dhammam Vipassato, because he experiences the Dhamma. Yato Yato Samasati Khandanam Udyabhyam. Whenever he watches the Khandra, the five aggregates, seeing arising and passing away, Labhati Piti Pamojam. He experiences joy and pleasure, Dhamma pleasure. Amatam Tam Vijanatam. This is a kind of a, how do you say that? Kind of tonic for those who are wise. They experience that this is the way to liberation. And you are very convinced that this is the practice that leads to liberation. You are sure about it. So that's why I told you that when you reach to this stage, then you are on the right path and you have really learned to meditate. The meditation practice is really strong. At this stage it is called Balava Vipassana. Balava means very strong. Before this stage it is called Taruna Vipassana. Taruna means weak, young, immature. At this stage it is mature, very strong, very mature Vipassana. And another thing that can distract the meditator at this stage is that because he has so much faith, confidence in the practice, and because he experiences so much lightness and freedom and joy, that he wants to tell other people to meditate, encourage people to meditate. Meditate, meditate. Let go of all those things. You have been doing that for so long. Stop doing that and meditate. Give up. So, want to encourage others and teach others also. But if you go and do that, you destroy your meditation. Don't stop and go and teach. Just keep on meditating. Don't encourage other people. Do that later. But it's very, very hard not to do that. Very hard to resist that. And the mindfulness, at that time, you experience like awareness and the object, they go for each other and they touch. You touch the object. But the objects come and touch the mind, hit the mind. So the coming in contact of the consciousness and the object becomes very, very clear. Before this stage, we don't understand what pasa means, what contact means. We hear about that contact, the mind coming in contact with the object. We hear about that, we think about that, we don't experience it. But at this stage, you can really experience the object and the mind meeting. The object becoming very clear in the mind. Sometimes the object goes into, the mind goes into the object. To give you an example, before this stage, it's like throwing a tennis ball to the wall. It hit the wall and it bounced back. But at this stage, you throw a very sticky ball and it goes and hits the object in space then. Like that. So the mind, the mindfulness does not run away, does not get distracted. Before this stage, sometimes we try to find the object to meditate on. At this stage, we don't try to find the object anymore. We don't have to try to find the object. The object comes to the consciousness, awareness, and sometimes the awareness is just there ready. Whatever arises, it is readily mindful. And because of so much interest and joy and energy and clarity, we get attached to that state and we don't want to stop meditating. And in a way, this is very good, because you are not lazy anymore, you are not distracted anymore. But in another way, you can get attached to it. And but we don't interpret that as attachment mostly. We think that I'm just happy to be meditating. I just like to meditate. And to discriminate the two things, how do you do that? When you don't experience those things anymore, then you feel unhappy about it. Oh, I want it again. I want that again. What can I do to get it again? So when you become unhappy about it, then that shows that you are attached to it. And the more you try to get it again, the harder it becomes. That's a very tricky thing to do. The harder you try, the harder it becomes. So at this stage, it is very important to watch your intention of meditation. When you meditate, look into your mind and see, what am I trying to do now? Am I trying to get to that stage? Because sometimes you have to go out, go and get your food and eat. For a month, we have to go to the village. It takes about an hour and a half. You come back and you eat the meal. More or less, you are distracted. And after you finish washing everything and you go and sit and meditate, you expect to go back to that state. You cannot do that. That expectation is a hindrance. So whenever we meditate, we have to remind ourselves, I'm not trying to do anything. I'm not trying to get anywhere. I'm not trying to experience what I have experienced before. I'm just trying to be aware of what is happening now. Very simple. So, what we do is not to get something, not to get somewhere. What we do is to be here and now, to pay attention to whatever is happening now. But no matter how our teachers warn us, give warning to us, when things happen like that, we still get attached to it. We still misinterpret it. So this is something we have to go through. The most important thing is not to get stuck there. So when these things happen, if you are with a teacher and you go and discuss with the teacher, your teacher will point out, look, you are getting attached to it. Watch that attachment first. He won't tell you give up the attachment, because if you don't see your attachment, you cannot give up. It is happening unconsciously. So first thing you have to do is make that attachment become conscious. And this instruction, this advice, has a very wide meaning. Whatever we want to overcome, first we must become conscious of it. Without becoming conscious of it, we cannot overcome that, no matter what. So the teacher will point that out. Look into your mind and see your attachment. And if you can see, after a while it becomes weaker and goes away, and it will come back again. You see it, it goes away, it comes back again. After a few times, it will go away. It won't come back anymore. Then you understand that getting attached to these happy states, these good experiences, is not the right path. Getting attached is the wrong path. No matter what, even meditation experience, if you get attached to it, you're on the wrong path. And if you see your attachment and overcome that attachment, then you understand that paying attention to whatever is happening right now, body or mind, is the right path. So this understanding is called Medha Jnana Dasana Visuddhi. And this is a compound word.
mega omega. Mega means the path, omega is not the path. Seeing that this is the path, this is not the path. Understanding the two very clearly is a kind of purity of mind, purity of understanding. Jnana dasana visuddhi. Visuddhi means purity. So all of God, all of us, so now and then, goes on the wrong path. So it's okay, it will happen. But see that and then come back to the right path again. Make mistake, learn from the mistake, correct yourself, and do the right thing again. This is the way we learn and grow. Without making a mistake, without correcting our mistake, we cannot learn and grow. So it's okay to make mistakes. But don't keep on making the mistake again and again. And another insight, I'll give you just a brief idea. In the beginning state of meditation, first we see the natural quality of physical and mental phenomena. Later we see generally impermanence and unsatisfactoriness and no permanent entity, no control, emptiness in a way. And then later we see arising and passing away very sharply, very clearly. And after that, we see passing away. So when we begin to see phenomenon arising and passing away, first we see passing away, but we don't see, first we see arising, but we don't see passing away. Before we see one phenomenon passing away, we see another phenomenon arising. So arising, 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 goes on like this. Another thing arising, another experience arising. After all, we see arising and passing away, a gap. Another arising and passing away, one gap. Another arising and passing away, another gap. So we see the gaps also. But after a while, we pay more attention to passing away, passing away. We don't pay so much attention to arising anymore. So in that state, impermanence becomes more and more clear. Everything is passing away very quickly. So when you see very clearly impermanence, and in that insight you also see unsatisfactoriness. Why? Because something arising and passing away so quickly, how can you find any satisfaction there? How can you rely on that? How can you depend on that? You can see that every moment is birth and death. And thus there's nothing you can keep. There's nothing you can hold on to. You only see that this is very unsatisfactory. Everything is arising and passing away very quickly. And because things are arising and passing away so quickly, it is not under your control. Every experience, every sensation, every thought, every mind moment, even this awareness, you can see that awareness passing away. So in this stage, the meditation becomes very complete. You see the object arising and passing away, you see the consciousness arising and passing away, you see this meditation consciousness, which is experiencing or seeing arising and passing away, I mean the vipassana jnana, vipassana wisdom even, even mindfulness you can see arising and passing away. So at first we see that this physical phenomenon is not me, not mine. Or this thought is not me, not mine. Thoughts are just arising and passing away. But you still see that this noticing mind, this awareness, is still there. It is mine. It is me. I'm meditating. I'm seeing. I'm aware. But when you come to this stage, you also see that even this meditation consciousness, even this awareness is passing away. So there's a simile for this. When you burn a dead body, first you use a very long stick to turn over the body, to make it burn. And when the body is burned, you also throw away the stick and let it burn. You don't keep anything. You can't keep anything. Even this meditation consciousness, even this awareness, you put into anicca, this is also anicca. Then only anicca understanding becomes complete.
If there's any part of your experience which you feel is yours, then you have not seen Anicca. Which you feel you can keep, then you have not experienced Anicca very well. So even this jnana arises in passing away. Awareness arising in passing away. And one can do that repeatedly. In the text they say you can do that until 10 times. But you don't have to do that. Object, consciousness, wisdom, seeing both arising and passing away, and watching that wisdom, watching that wisdom, watching that wisdom again and again, for 10 times. But you don't have to do that 10 times. I don't know where it is. Watching this vipassana jnana and seeing it as impermanent is called pati-vipassana. The first vipassana jnana is called vipassana. Watching that vipassana jnana, that wisdom, and seeing it as impermanent is called pati-vipassana. This vipassana wisdom becomes the object of vipassana again. I think I've made the meaning quite clear. Right? Even the wisdom is impermanent at this stage, you can see that. Even the awareness is impermanent. So you don't get identified with even this meditative awareness. Just like the simile, after you burn the body, you even burn the stick. So next week, I will try to give more detail about this fifth insight, Bhanga Jnana, seeing dissolution. After this fourth jnana, it's much easier. I've got a lot to go. Quite a lot to go. So now if you have any question about this fourth insight, if anything is not clear, Yes, Barbara, please. The first jnana is called Nama Rupa Pariccheda Jnana. Seeing Nama as a process, mind as a process, and Rupa, physical, as a process. So seeing that as not a being. Like, hotness is hot on it. It is not a man or a woman. It has no shape, no color. Just hot. Hardness is just hardness. You cannot say that this hardness is a man's hardness. This hardness is a woman's hardness. Hardness is just hardness. Softness is just softness. And movement is just movement. It is not a man, it is not a woman. These phenomena, they have no shape, no form. They are just qualities. So please pay attention to this again. While we meditate, we are paying attention to the quality. And any quality is not a being. And when the jnana or the nama also, the mental, you can see that as just mental phenomena. It is not a being. Because greed is not a woman, not a man. Greed is just wanting something. Whether it happens to you or me, it is the same quality, wanting. Wanting this or wanting that doesn't matter. Just wanting, the nature of wanting. This is just an example. Any other kind of mental state also, you can see that it's just a mental state. Not a being, not a thing, not a man, not a woman. So, seeing Nama and Rupa is called Nama Rupa Pariccheda Jnana. There are two things happening. One is Rupa, another is Nama. After that, you see the cause of these mental and physical phenomena. So that is called Paccaya Parigraha Jnana. Seeing the cause also. After that, you see Anicca Dukkha Anatta generally, which is called Sammasana Jnana. In this stage,
a lot of force of Dharma also arises. Talks about Nama, talks about Rupa, talks about Anicca, talks about Dukkha, talks about Anatta also. And after this stage, those thoughts no more. You see things arising and passing away very sharply, very clearly. This is called Udavayanyana, fourth. And the fifth is called Bhanganyana, dissolution, dissolution, dissolution. Passing away, passing away, passing away, disappearing. So after I finish all those, I'll go through the whole thing briefly again. Yes. And please. Please ask again. You see? No, no, not yet. Just halfway now. But actually, this is the real beginning of meditation. That's why one requirement to become enlightened is seeing arising and passing away very clearly. This is strong vipassana stage, balava vipassana stage. Chula, yes, minor. No, not yet. You are still Chula. Chula. Yes, still. Until to the very close to the enlightenment state, still Chula Sotopanna. In order, yes, in order, but some people go through very slowly and stay in one insight for a long time, and then go through very quickly another insight and go and stay, or go through very slowly another insight. It happens like that, but it has to be in this series, in this order. So not everybody experiences in the same way. For some people, they might spend a long time in first insight, and second and third very quickly, and then they might spend a long time in the fourth insight to develop. Actually, the first insight takes a long time. Second and third, not so long. The fourth takes some time, because of a lot of hindrances, a lot of attachment, distraction, not distracted to another thing, but distracted to the experience. And after that, it can become faster until another stage where people get stuck. And I'll come to that stage later in a few days, next week or the other week. So this is the order of the development of insight. Some people spend more time in one insight, some less. Mm-hmm. Any more questions? Mm-hmm. Yes. If you don't keep everything, you lose it. Mostly you go back to the first, but you don't go back to zero. Not zero. That means, you know, you have gone beyond the first stage of enlightenment. Before that, you can lose it. You can lose it, but even though you lose it, you still maintain some deep wisdom there. Even though you die, this experience, it has great power. You will revive it again. You will revive, or it will demand. Yes, that is true. Mm-hmm.
So don't be discouraged. Do it. Even though you stop meditating, you don't get so confused anymore. You still maintain some awareness, and when you meditate again, you develop it easily. Some awareness too, yes. Not very strong, yes. No. Samadhi, just pure samadhi, you cannot see impermanence. You can see only the quality without arising and passing away. Or you can keep your mind on some concept. You can keep your mind on even emptiness. I tried that for a long time and I liked that very much. You know why it is good to contemplate on emptiness? Because emptiness does not make you unhappy. It is nothing there to make you unhappy. Yes, you can meditate it because it's so nice. When you get attached to it and when you cannot get it, then you feel unhappy. But when you keep practicing it, you can go into that state very quickly and stay there. Just empty, nothing there. Nothing to worry you. So this is a kind of distancing also. Psychologically distancing. Yes? You have to keep up the practice. Keep practicing it. But when you get to this fourth stage of meditation, you cannot make mistakes anymore. You know what to do. That's why the last thing I told you is, you know what the path and you know what's not the path. So you cannot make mistakes anymore. Keep going. You'll be there. So that's a kind of relief. Because before that you're not sure what to do. Maybe I'm making a mistake. Is this right or wrong? Yes. No set amount of time. It depends on your clarity, on your maturity also. So some people take a long time to develop one insight to its maturity. So even in one insight, there's a kind of range. For example, this fourth insight, it is a wide range. So in the beginning stage of fourth insight, you see arising and passing away, and there are a lot of thoughts also coming in sometimes. And if you develop that more and more, this arising and passing away become more and more clear, more and more clear, more and more clear. After a while, it goes beyond that and see dissolving, dissolving, passing away more and more. So every insight has a range. So it depends not on just the time amount. The quality of your meditation is very important. Yes? If you can develop jhana, you can use that jhana concentration to practice vipassana, and with the help of this strong concentration, you can make progress very quickly because the mind is not distracted. You have already developed very concentrated mind. But to develop jhana is also quite difficult. So there are two ways of meditating. One is first developing jhana and then meditating vipassana. That is called samatha yanika, using samatha as a vehicle. To Not really proper jhana, but when you get to this full insight, you develop strong enough samadhi, which is very similar to jhana. The mindfulness becomes very, very strong. When mindfulness becomes very strong, concentration also becomes very strong. The two are very similar in quality. You don't have to develop jhana. He used jhana to pass away because he... I can't tell you exactly why Buddha did that. But for meditation, vipassana, if you can develop concentration, it helps quite a lot. But if you cannot develop jhana, you can still practice vipassana, which is called sukha vipassana. Not sukha, sukha, which means vipassana without jhana. So two ways of practicing, first developing jhana and then vipassana. Another way is without developing jhana concentration, just straight away meditating vipassana. You can do it two ways. If you, when you practice samatha, what is the object of your meditation? It is actually a kind of concept, an idea, or an image. Let's say, for example, when you practice metta meditation, you can develop jhana, but the object of your metta meditation is person, which is in its own way a kind of reality, samudhisaccha. So when you want to meditate vipassana, you have to let go of this concept or idea of person and switch to natural, physical or mental phenomena, either of the two. But for samatha meditators, after they develop samatha jhana, mostly they go straight to citta nipassana, not to kaya nipassana. Citta nipassana. But after the jhana, they wash the jhana consciousness and see the qualities of the jhana consciousness. Because they let go of the object of the jhana,